This is AEW's QT Marshall, the leader of the number one faction, The Factory, and you are watching the Battleground Podcast.
Battleground! Live from the Parts Unknown Studios.
You've entered the Battleground.
Battleground! The Battleground! Battleground!
The Battleground.
Welcome to the Battleground Podcast, your place for all things pro wrestling.
Battleground!
Give it up for your hosts.
Welcome to the Battleground.
What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Battleground Podcast. And there's a lot of great things happening over the next several weeks that involve AEW. So I'm going to go ahead and bring in my tag team partner. Let's bring him in. There's Eli with the are you marking today right now?
A little bit. You got me thinking about Tracy Lawrence over there with your shirt.
A little. Oh, no, this isn't right Tracy Lawrence.
Well, I know, but he had the song Texas Tornado.
Well, true, very true.
Shout out to Mr. Josh Pruno, who's buddies with him. So yeah, what's up? This is gonna be an interesting chat. Yeah.
So I'm gonna let normally I introduce the people, but I'm gonna let you do that, Eli. You want to bring in our special guest for today?
Yeah. You know him well. He used to be really good friends with Cody. They had a falling out. He's one of the trainers at the Nightmare Factory and is currently the head of the factory. Mr. QT Marshall's here today.
Yeah, there he is. Or is it QT Marshall? How do you want us to say it? Us rednecks that, yeah. Down here,
yeah,
read it as QT Marshall.
Right, it's Marshall. but that's all right. It's your first time, Eli, so I'll let it slide.
Once I got the M out, I was like, it's wrong.
That's all right. Don't worry about it.
it's the redneck southernness. It's like you see it. It's like QT Marshall. No, it's QT Marshall, the man with. First off, let me just ask this. When are we getting a QT Marshall line of shirts? Because I need the shirts that you wear every week.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought about doing a t-shirt that looked like a bowling shirt. This way it's more affordable for everybody. But I think it would have to be one of those like special orders where, you know, we'd have to take the order up first and then kind of order them in by size and stuff like that. Or I could buy a boatload of them, but we'll see. I don't know. I kind of like being different. I don't like people rocking my style, so.
I mean, I would buy a bowling t-shirt if shopaew.com would throw some up there.
Yeah.
I almost bought the AEW bomber jacket. So, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm right there with you.
Let's kind of just jump into this real quick. If there were a sequel to the Wrestler documentary, what would it look like 3 years after the original was released?
Man, it's what a difference, huh? Yeah. I mean, it's like dreams can come true if you just keep working hard. I think it's a much happier ending, but we'll see. You know, it's been a crazy ride over the past 3 years, ever since that movie came out. Again, that movie wasn't designed to help propel my career, but it kind of did in its own way. So I'm thankful for Frank and his team that were able to bring that to life. But yeah, I think the sequel would be great. But they'd notice how busy I am, and maybe they'd... Plus, then they would see what I do, and then they would want to take my spot. So maybe it's not a good idea to put that.
Yeah, maybe we just let it be. And, you know, they say sometimes the sequels never live up to the first one, because I saw the other day that they were talking about Will Ferrell turning down $29 million to do an Elf 2.
Well, so, I would take $29 million to do a QT Marshall story, too. Yeah, I promise you.
No joke there.
So we just passed the two-year anniversary of AEW Dynamite, and really put the wrestling world on notice. Comparing year one of the product with year two, what do you think has been the biggest difference in the product that AEW is putting out now?
I think obviously the roster, right? Like we've had many additions to our roster. And then on top of that, just that going through that pandemic era of, you know, no fans and, you know, it was just very difficult to get through, but we did it. So the fact that we were able to do that, I think you're seeing a lot more fun from the AEW wrestlers. And then on top of that, from the fans as well. So I think, like I always say, there's nothing like being at an AEW show live. Our fans are the greatest wrestling fans out there. So I think that's probably the main difference, is that, you know, now we get to do it again. It's almost like re-debuting. And then you have someone like CM Punk that's been away for so long. So like he's re-debuting in all of these cities. So it's like, I don't know. It's pretty cool. It's like a welcome back tour almost.
for yeah. sure. And we were actually lucky enough to be at one of the first Dynamites when it first started. It was in Nashville. And I want to say maybe it was like the third or fourth Dynamite. And when we went, like, it was unlike any live wrestling show we went to. I think that we've had high praises about this. When we went, there was stuff going on during commercial breaks. There was stuff going on that kept you just, you know, entertained. You weren't just sitting there like, okay, we know we're on commercial break. Mm-hmm. Now what? And right. I think the thing that we really liked was when you came back from commercial break, you're sitting there playing what the commentary team is saying very soft on the speaker so you can hear. So you're not just like, okay, well, we know they're talking, but what are they talking about?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's something, I don't know if we really do that as much now, but, you know, because now we have so much more talent. So
yeah.
when we come back from commercial break, you'll see a lot more behind the scenes, not behind the scenes, like, you know, backstage interviews and promos and stuff like that. This way, you know, Tony Khan, he really does a great job of trying to get everybody on the show as much as he possibly can. I mean, we only have 2 hours, and in that 2 hours, there's only, you know, there's obviously less than that with the commercial breaks of content. So we really try to go above and beyond to get everyone on there and tell their stories. And, you know, without that kind of timing, then we try to put everyone out there for our Elevation shows or Dark or Rampant. You know, there's just
yeah.
so much content that we're trying to produce just for the fans and obviously for the wrestlers as well.
I've really liked Dark Band at Universal. That kind of studio setting kind of reminds me, I think everybody's saying it reminds them of like WCW Saturday Night and stuff like that. Yeah. It's been awesome. I've really enjoyed that format now. I think that's, I don't know. I appreciate the doing it at the other live shows and stuff like that, but I think that setting is just, I don't know, it just seems to work better for that show.
Yeah, I mean, we do both now. So like this Friday, for instance, in St. Louis, it's just a live Rampage, which is only 1 hour of content. So we'll probably do Dark there instead, you know what I mean? And then it's kind of like you said, like Saturday night, we relate it to WCW Worldwide, where we just kind of put a lot of evergreen content in there and then see where it fits and, you know, make it work. So it's great because, like I said, it gives a lot of the talent, you know, an opportunity to get out there and work. And then also, I mean, like for those fans that do show up, like you had Bryan Danielson, Adam Cole. It's not like you're just getting, you know, our lower card talent or the younger athletes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of getting the best of both.
For sure. And you talk about there's a lot of great product that AEW is putting out. I mean, there's wrestling just about almost every night of the week when it comes to the AEW product. And Tony Schiavone kind of recently mentioned about like the possibility of a streaming service for AEW, maybe even ending up on HBO Max. Do you think that's going to happen? And do you think that it'll eventually be the home of like AEW pay-per-views?
Oh, I honestly have no idea. I mean, that would be cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love the idea of us being on actual pay-per-view. It's different. Obviously, that model has kind of gone away since the WWE Network kind of came out and now with Peacock. So, you know, I think it's cool. Like when I was watching wrestling growing up, I would go to my friend's house and we'd have like three or four people there. We'd all chip in $10, $15, whatever it was. And, you know, order pizza and kind of watch the shows. I don't really know how many people do that anymore. I know times have changed, but they should get back to it because it's what makes it really fun when you're sitting there. And plus you're exposing it to some of your friends that might not be watching AEW. And that's what I tell everybody when they say like, what could we do to help out AEW? Tell a friend, you know, tell a friend that used to watch wrestling, or if you know someone that used to watch it, just tell them to give us a chance and odds are they're going to love us.
And when back then too, there'd be times where you do that three times a month, you know, WWE pay-per-view, WCW, ECW, like,
right.
And it's so,
it's an expensive month sometimes.
Yeah. So for the people, they're like, man, this is $50. Like, that's how it's always been. Like, it's always
been that way.
You do that 12 times a year or more, you know?
So. Right. And it's only 50 if you watch it alone. If you get a friend, it's 25.
Split it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like having a piece of cake, you know, it's half the calories if you share it.
Boom.
And I think that was the cool thing that we've noticed here recently. I want to say it was the last pay-per-view you guys started showing it in movie theaters.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing. Like we've had the conversation between me and Eli, because we've got a lot of big wrestling fans here in Nashville. And it's like, where can we go to have like a big watch party at? And I think having it at the movie theaters gives you that opportunity to hang out with a bunch of people that you either know or don't know. And you all come together for that one thing at the end of the night and you're watching wrestling together.
Yeah, I mean, if it was up to me, if I wasn't at the pay-per-view physically as a wrestler for AEW, I would find out where the closest theater was and hold a meet and greet and watch the pay-per-view with the fans. I mean, it would be really cool to do that. Unfortunately, I can never do it because I have to be on the headset or in the ring or something like that. But, you know, that would be something cool. I remember back in the day, you know, WWF New York, right? They always had somebody show up and it was just a different atmosphere and a different time. But I think we can bring it back. We brought back a lot of stuff in wrestling that we've loved growing up. So who knows?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a cool
exciting concept. Stuff.
All right. So we recently had All Out. It's been a little bit of time now, 2 months ago, I guess. You had an uphill battle against the legendary Paul White. Of course, since we're on the internet, there was some criticism, but a lot of writers,
gotta love the IWC, by the way.
Yeah. You know, but you know, a lot of, you know, I guess I call them dirt sheet. A lot of writers commended it not only for the, you know, what it was, but also the placement of the show. Also with Paul's first match in a while. What are your thoughts on the bout looking back on it, and how important is card placement concerning matches?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about perspective. I was on one of the biggest pay-per-views in the past, well, the biggest in the past 20 years, non-WWF.
And we'll be talking about it in 50 years.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm never going to complain about it. The fact that we were put where we were put, you know, obviously, yeah, there has to be some sort of a break in between. And I know, obviously, what was written on paper, how much time we had, how much we were allotted and stuff. And we had more than that. It didn't go as long, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. I really love the buildup to it. I love telling that story with Tony Schiavone, his son. And listen, at the end of the day, you know, this is my first TV run, like real TV run, you know? Yeah. So I thought it was as great as it could be. Some people might not have liked it. Some people probably didn't love that I was on the pay-per-view. But whatever, you know, Paul White, if he wasn't on the pay-per-view, they would say, oh, why wasn't he on the pay-per-view? He's a big star, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. That's two times we've talked about cake. So you can tell how hungry I am.
I'm right there with you, bro.
Yeah. But I mean, like at the end of the day, like I said, it was fun. It was a great experience to be out there in front of a live sold out crowd, you know, in Chicago. And that was the building that, you know, I helped produce All In last minute. So it's like a full turnaround circle because, you know, at All In, I was there on my own dime, just trying to hang out and see what could happen. Right. And it turned into what it is today. So,
and a lot of people, I don't think at their job, if you were in front of 20,000 people and you were like, hey, you have 10 minutes for this. And then right before you're starting, like, okay, wait, we need three. I couldn't do something like that on a whim. You know what I mean? And like, I don't think a lot of people understand that, like in the live production, things change. It's moving parts. You know what I mean? Like you may have three and they say go 10, you may have 10, they say go three, you know, and just, you know, I think a lot of people overlook the fact that like there are moving parts and things change. And, you know, what we see, the final product was, like you said, you know, probably not what was on paper, but you had to compromise, you know?
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, at the end of the day, too, like I take that as a major compliment to be put in a position where if something gets changed, you know, that I'm able to adapt. And that just comes from, you know, a lot of years of experience and training and just all the stuff that helped me get to where I'm at today.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of great stuff going on with AEW at the moment. I mean, you've got the world title eliminator tournament. You've got the TBS Women's Championship. Do you kind of have like a favorite who you're wanting to win those tournaments?
I'm a little biased. Of course, I would like Anna Jay to win. I mean, she's one of my students, so that would be great for her to become the first ever. In the men's division, you know, I don't know. You know, I think it would be a feel-good story for Bryan Danielson to come to AEW and win the AEW World Championship. So, you know, and he had a hellacious match with Eddie on Rampage.
My chest was hurting watching that match.
Yeah, I think, you know, the fan favorite, obviously, is probably, you know, I don't know. It's either.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. Like I said, I think the feel-good story would be Bryan. But you never know. I mean, there's a different side of Jon Moxley that, you know, we really haven't seen. And he's showing it now. And, you know, he's someone I wouldn't want to mess with.
No, sir. And, you know, we're kind of big fans of Anna Jay on this show. We were one of her first like actual interviews when she came to AEW. And it's like, I mean, just sitting there looking at me and Eli were like, she's going to be a champion. Like, I guarantee within the next 2 years, and this was right before the injury, I was like, within the next 2 years, she's going to be a champion. And it's going to be a fun match to watch if it comes down to her and Jade Cargill.
Right. Jade, another one of my students. So, I mean, you know, Jade was previously trained over at another facility with like Teddy Long and Heath Slater's school face to face. A little plug for them. But and then she came over to us and she puts in a lot of hard work and she's always training. And, you know, obviously she looks like a superhero. So I don't know who I would root for in that. In
that's
that
a tough
match,
one. But
yeah, I might not want to watch that one. Who knows?
But man, that's what we're thinking is going to be the final. It's going to got to come down to them. But something we kind of want to talk about, you and Cody Rhodes, very close. At one point in time, I believe in some past interviews, you had mentioned that you were his assistant. Do you think the real life history between you two made for a better storyline with the feud you guys had?
I think so. I think anything that's real can, you know, the fans can kind of, they can feel that, right? So, yeah. You know, being his assistant and, you know, him having an idea for me to always work backstage and then getting the opportunity to wrestle and then getting the opportunity to team with his brother and all this stuff. And then seeing what happens when you join the Nightmare family, as opposed to when you're on your own. And I kind of thought about it and, you know, I knew if I did what we did, there's no turning back. And that was a choice that I had to live with. I was okay with it. I mean, we were able to, you know, have the great match at Blood and Guts. And then we had another one in the strap match and our first show back in an indoor arena. With fans and everything. So
that was a hot crowd.
Yeah, I was very excited for that. And, you know, just overall, I've always said that when I wrestle, I don't want to wrestle for no reason. I want to wrestle with a story or at least something where the fans can, you know, get some emotion behind everything. Because if not, you're just, like I said in my promo, you're just out there wasting bumps. And at 36, you know, I don't really have that many bumps to waste, especially that I had neck surgery. So it's like I'm on a second lease in wrestling. So I don't really want to take advantage of that either.
Yeah, right, you want to make them count.
And of course, Wednesday night, AEW is back on TNT. Of course, you can start watching that. Rampage is on Friday nights. Definitely do yourself a favor. Check that out. Of course, on the YouTube channel, make sure you're watching everything. I mean, there is literally, I don't think you can't go one night without having some sort of AEW in front of you on a screen somewhere.
Right.
And that's the great thing. As a wrestling fan, there is multiple nights that you could just sit there and watch wrestling. And it's a great time to be a wrestling fan for sure.
Oh yeah. As a wrestler as well. I mean, there's really no better time than the present. I mean, yeah. Like I could be on Elevation on Monday, Dark on Tuesday, Dynamite on Wednesday, and then Rampage on Friday. I mean, I don't know how many fans would love that, but then on top of that, you could be on the Road to shows. Like there's just so many opportunities to get yourself out there. You know, and that's the best part about AEW, I think, is that we try to give everyone a platform to get out there and make that connection with the audience.
Absolutely. So this is kind of a fun question. You may get some laugh out of this. So what is your reaction to the AEW fans booing Cody recently? And why do you think he's getting those boos? Is it a little bit of come up? Or?
Yeah, I mean, well, it depends. I think they were booing him because, like, especially right now with Malachi. Malachi is cool. He's fresh. You know, he's from the other place. So it's like, you know, they, oh, okay. Hey, we're in the honeymoon phase of Malachi. And so I do expect that. I did expect that. And, you know, on top of that, Cody is like a very polarizing figure, right? He's got his own tour bus, the suits. He's rich. He's successful. You know,
a reality show.
It's like a reality show. I mean, it is hard on the surface to like him. But at the same time, what has he done to deserve to get booed? I don't know. You know, I punched Arn Anderson in the face. So I deserve to get booed. You know, Malachi kicked Arn's head off. He deserves to get booed. I'm trying to think of one thing that Cody's done that deserves booing from the fans. And, you know, at the same time, like as long as they're making noise, I don't think he really cares one way or the other.
Mm-mm. And it's kind of like, this is a weird comparison, but it's like all those people that boo Cody are the same ones that will come up to him after the show asking for a selfie.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Cena or Roman Reigns, right?
Yes.
You know, which hey, if that's who you're going to compare him to, I don't think he's going to care that much.
Maybe yeah, it's I mean, like, any reaction's better than no reaction. I mean, right. If he went out there and the auditorium was just, then he's not doing his job.
Yeah, yeah. Or they leave to go get popcorn, right?
Yeah, and it, I mean, I think to be fair, and you probably know better than us, I mean, it sounds like it's like a 50-50. It's not like it's just a crowd of boos. I mean, he's still getting a lot of cheers, and, you know, I think
who he's in there with too, because when he came out in Miami Rampage at the end of the show to save Pac, I mean, that place went nuts.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And then in Orlando, he wrestled Malakai again. And then it was a little split back when we won, you know, but then after he gave a post-match speech and everyone loved him. So it's like, sometimes the audience just is going to do what they're going to do. And like I said, at the end of the day, as long as they're making noise, I really think that's all that matters. They're having a good time and that's what they pay their money for. They're allowed to make those decisions on who they want to cheer, who they want to boo. There's times I hit a move and they start cheering and I look at them and that's when I have to, you know, do something that's going to make them boo.
Yeah,
right.
Turn the heat up.
Reel it back in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I am a wrestler, so I have to do wrestling moves. But at the same time, I definitely don't want to get cheered over the guy that I'm in there with.
Yeah. Right, for sure. And something really good that AEW has been done is cultivating homegrown talent. And I feel as if that's partially because of you guys with the Nightmare Factory, and you're also kind of bringing in some established names, like we talked about Punk and we talked about Brian from around the world. Do you feel the company should still go after some of those bigger free agents to help establish that brand, or do you prefer building those fresh faces?
I think it all depends. It all depends on if they fit, if they like, especially those free agents, what they're in it for. Of course, the cliche is that they want to help out the younger talent, which I agree with, at the same time as I've said that myself, but of course everyone wants to be world champion too. So it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword, but like I said, yeah, I think it really depends on the mindset of each talent. And they, you know, sometimes they might, if they've been in say WWE or Impact or something like that, they might've had a writer for the past 5-6 years and they come to AEW and they might not have a clue what's going on because they're expecting us to write stuff for them. And of course, Tony does come up with ideas and stuff like that, but like, Tony's not going to write your promo for you. You know what I mean? He might give you ideas and suggestions on which way, you know, which road he wants you to take it down. But at the end of the day, like, we have so much creative freedom that sometimes it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we've noticed here is like when you sit there and you see somebody get released from another company, it seems like the first thing that everybody says is they're going to be all elite. And right. I feel as if that's kind of like a good thing for you guys, because that just even draws more attention to you, because before there was never this I guess, competition.
Yeah. I mean, you know, of course, as soon as someone gets released, that's the first thing everybody says. And sometimes that's, I'm sure some of our locker room thinks, oh, here comes another person or something like that. But like I said, it's also about what are they going to do for us too, right? Like, you know, as much as Tony, I'm sure, loves paying people to wrestle, you know, they have to have a return on their investment as well. You know, or like maybe they bring something backstage, right? Like I always said, you know, I'm a wrestler in AEW, but I think I make my money backstage. And then I'm just fortunate enough to be able to go out there and wrestle and entertain and live out my dream. But I work really hard behind the scenes to make sure that happens. And then there's some people that are only wrestlers. And unfortunately, if we already have a bunch of wrestlers that are really good, maybe we don't need them. And maybe it's, you know, I've had friends reach out to me before and say stuff, and I'm just like, you know, maybe there's no interest at the moment, but the whole world is out there, man. Like make AEW. If I was a free agent right now, I would think, okay, I'm going to go out of my way to make AEW need me. Mm-hmm. Not begging for, you know, I don't want to beg for the job at AEW. I'm going to say, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I have my whole, you know, creative freedom. I can do whatever I want to do. I can hit certain indie shows. I can get over with that audience. And our audience is that independent audience. There's just a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's been kind of a testament to, you know, everyone backstage, starting with Tony Dow. You know, you guys aren't just signing every single free agent. You're not signing every WWE release. And I think over the last, even going back into WCW, that, you know, Impact kind of has this perception, but, you know, if they were released from WWE, you know, they're going to Impact. And like you said, I think the key thing is just like, not every free agent's going to fit AEW, you know, not every, well, you know, I don't know if The Undertaker would work in AEW. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are certain people that just, you know, just because they're free agents, it doesn't mean it's going to work with the philosophy and everything with AEW. So I think you guys have done a really good job of signing the key players, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, one of the key words that we like to throw around is fresh. We want fresh. Sometimes, you know, it's getting the freshness out of people that we already have by putting them with some major stars or something like that. But like I said, I mean, I've been wrestling 17 years, but this is kind of like year one and a half, year two of me actually wrestling. Yeah. So, you know, I'm considered fresh, believe it or not, as much as people might not want to admit it. Cause there was only a handful that saw any of my work when I was in Ring of Honor back in 2012. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, I think fresh is the way to go. I think that's what everybody wants. And that's what AEW as a whole was when it first started.
For sure. Right. Well, kind of going back to one of the things we talked about earlier, you wear a lot of hats, and a lot of people in AEW do. Between being a coach, backstage, all the jobs you have backstage, and in-ring performer, what has been the biggest challenge since AEW became a company? Is it just time management? Has that been the biggest challenge? Or
yeah, I would say so. I mean, there's certain times where, like, you know, I'm trying to get ready for a match, and then something happens for Dynamite. And, you know, because I am the person that physically types it, you know, like I said, it's not my ideas, but I physically am the one most of the time that's typing it. Yeah. Unless I have my friend Denise in the truck that could do it for me. But that goes a long way, especially if I have a match in 20 minutes when most people are getting warmed up and, you know, doing pushups and stuff. And I'm on my computer and, you know, the talent I'm working with is asking me questions, and I have literally, I'm like, hey, I'll just talk to you out there, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I love it. So at the end of the day, like, there's definitely no complaining about it. And, you know, it's time management, but we're all learning as we go.
Yeah. And you talk about the whole backstage element. Like, I was recently involved with like a special manager match with Impact, and I didn't realize how much work went into it. And it was only going to be like a 5 to 10 minute match, but there was like a 15 to 20 minute walkthrough of everything that we were having to do.
Yeah, I mean, so that's obviously because, you know, you're not a, you know, fully trained wrestler, right?
Exactly.
I always, when we do our matches at our facility, if you have a 5 minute match, you have 5 minutes to put it together. If it takes any longer than that, you know, because there's a lot of it that you should be able to just kind of feel it out there and wing it, you know. And at the end of the day, like, you could say all you want about you have to listen to the audience, and you do 100%. But think about last year when there was no audience. Yeah. So when we're training at a training facility and there's no audience, you know, you kind of just got to know where you're going, I guess.
Right. And I mean, it was a great experience. I mean, it was me versus the Nashville SC mascot. We were the special manager. So it was a weird thing, but it was like, we didn't really do much action. It was just kind of like here, there, and everywhere else. But sure. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes on. And like you said, backstage, I mean, you're trying to get ready for your match while doing this, this, and this. When I was backstage, you had everybody running through their matches and, you know, doing the push-ups and the curls and all this stuff. I mean, it was nuts. But something really cool, and I want to know about this. You are ranked number 129 on PWI's top 500 list for 2021.
Okay. How about that, haters? How about that?
I know. Are accolades like that important to you, or more static than anything else?
You know, if I was number one, I think it would be really exciting. I think
we'll petition to get that happen.
There you go. I think, you know, obviously we use a lot of PWI stuff on our show. So who knows? I know there's some indie wrestlers that were way ahead of me, and I've never understood that list. I can't comprehend how someone that's wrestling, you know, 40 times a year, 30 times a year in front of 200 people can be ranked higher than someone wrestling on national television. So I don't know. To me, it's not one of those things that, like, I'm going to frame. Like, I like all the stuff that I'm involved in, you know, like I said, Blood and Guts or the first ever Bunkhouse match or Mr. Brody Lee's first match. Like, those things, you know, really mean a lot to me. But if it means a lot to the fans, or if the fans get really upset about me being number 129, great. You know,
you're doing your job.
Yeah. Then I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I feel like maybe I should have been ranked a little higher, but I don't know. It all depends on how many people are on national television. If, you know, there's 128 that are all on TV, I agree with it. If there's only 40 that are on TV, I don't agree with the numbers.
Yeah. Well, and if you do it from your standpoint of this is technically your year two, I mean, 129 for year two, that's not too shabby.
Yeah. I think the only other time I was ranked was like in 2012, I was three something. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't think Sting was in the top 200 in his second year. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. out there, you know. So, yeah. Anyway,
he could have been number one, you know.
Yeah. So, concerning the factory, what is on the horizon for the factory as we wrap 2021 and head into 2022?
I don't know yet. You know, we were just talking the other day about what we could do, and I think finding a new member would be nice. Maybe a female. Who knows? You know, like I said, I like giving those guys the experience. For instance, like when this happened in my eye, and we did dark the next day. You know, obviously they weren't going to have me out there wrestling. So then Aaron Solo got an opportunity to wrestle Brian Danielson. And I think that really, you know, helped him out, you know, through the eyes of some of the people backstage to say, oh man, like Aaron's really good. You know, he was able to hang in there with Brian Danielson. And of course, you know, Brian Danielson hasn't had a bad match in, you know, forever. So, but I mean, like I said, that really, I think, helped raise Aaron's stock. And like I said, it's really hard to get TV time right now. There's just so many people and so many stories, and obviously building up to a pay-per-view. And that's just something that you have to kind of understand. We had a lot of TV time going into All Out. So the fact that we don't have a match at the pay-per-view, it's understandable that we're not going to be out there all the time. And, you know, as long as the guys and girls are that aren't a part of that pay-per-view are getting reps elsewhere, you know, on the YouTube shows or all of our shoulder content, or, you know, I think it definitely goes a long way. So yeah, we're waiting to see. I mean, you know, we're trying to figure out what's next for us. Anthony Ogogo, he just came back over here, you know, from England and stuff. So we'll see. You know, I think maybe we'll get him back out there. I know he did really well in his match with Cody, and the matches leading up to it for somebody that had never, you know, besides training, never had an actual, you know, live wrestling match. So
yeah. And he looked really good out there too.
He's a natural.
Yeah. And Aaron is killer. I saw him about four years ago. He did the, it was part of Ring of Honor, but it was Dojo Pro.
Sure.
And
he won it.
Yeah. But it was like Joey Janela was on it. James Storm from Impact. I mean, there was a MJF, I think, was a part of it. Yeah. But I mean, he stood out. I was like, holy crap. And then, you know, fast forward to him getting lined up with you guys and signing and stuff, is just like, man, he's a steal, man. He's one of those that don't have a lot of eyes on him yet. But I mean, as you can see with his match, I mean, with Brian, he can go.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, you mentioned the pay-per-view Full Gear is happening on November 13th. It's going to go down in Minneapolis. And if you would like to buy tickets, you could still grab those. And you can also watch it on pay-per-view. All the details, just hit up the website, allelitewrestling.com. And real quick, QT, I know we've been chatting for a little bit, and it's an honor to have you on the show. Is there anything you want to tell everybody before we let you go?
Yeah, I mean, keep watching AEW. Like I said, tell a friend. If you're in the wrestling industry and you're, you know, your goal is to come to AEW, keep working hard, try to check off as many boxes as you can, you know, and keep getting yourself out there. And like I said, make AEW need to hire you, not want, but need, where there's a, like I said, an actual need. And that's it. You know, for the most part, I'm on social media, Twitter, Instagram. I'm not as, you know, on there as much as I should be, but, you know, like I said, time management, and also, you know, being married and having a puppy as well. So, but yeah, that's basically it. I'm pretty low key, and, I will be doing a lot of seminars. I know I've got booked for a bunch of seminars in the next couple of months. And that's where we find a lot of our young talent that appear on Dark and stuff like that. There's no guarantee that we're going to pick people, but at the end of the day, like, I do meet a lot, and there's always at least one or two out there that I'm like, man, this guy or this girl, you know, let's bring her into Dark, or let's bring her in, you know, when we're in their city or something like that. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. I mean, usually I'm scheduled for like 2 hours. I'm usually there about 8 or 9. Like, it's absurd. I just love to teach, and I love to see people that want to perform and that have the heart to make it. The ones that don't, you know, they're there too. And of course, we're never going to turn people away either. So,
yeah.
And that's gotta be cool now that AEW has a much larger audience. I'm sure you're getting, these seminars are getting bigger and bigger. And like you said, the 2 hours are turning into 6 to 8 hours. And
yeah. Well, one thing in wrestling, you know, I've never loved the carny atmosphere of wrestling, if I could say that. So yeah. I really try to go above and beyond to give everyone their money's worth, because at the end of the day too, like, for me to leave my house on a weekend, it's expensive, right? Like, yeah. That's what I tell the promoter and the schools or whatever it is. So we do charge a premium price, but I really go above and beyond. And, you know, at the end I ask everybody, like, if you don't feel that you've learned something or this wasn't worth your time or money, just let me know. you know, I'd rather just give you back your money than have to, you know, listen to you complain about, you know, that you thought you were going to get a job with AEW, you know, as soon as we started or something like that.
And I feel as if, like, if somebody trains with you guys or they think that they're going to come to the Nightmare Factory, it's an automatic shot at getting at AEW, right?
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things that I go above and beyond to make sure, like, it's in their paperwork that that's not going to happen. Now, of course, we're not going to give people away to the other companies if they feel like they have a, you know, like a great shot at making us money and making themselves money. But at the same time, like, most of them are beginners. After 12 weeks, like, for you to think that you're going to just get a job with AEW, it's kind of ignorant. But, you know, there are the people out there that believe that. And every now and then we'll find someone like that. So you just never know. I mean, look at the girl, Kayla, that was with Joey Janela. She was in like week five. Yeah, she was in week five and they started bringing her to TV. You know, it was like, I'm sure the other campers weren't happy about that. Yeah. Week five in wrestling. But how about the 12, 13 years she put in and 20 years into gymnastics and, you know, being a professional bodybuilder and having her own app and, you know, having a huge following. Like, people don't understand that. They just see, oh, she's only been wrestling for X amount of weeks. Like, so there's a lot that goes into it. Like I said, I mean, wrestling is the job that we do, but it's a small part of the job. And you have to bring a lot more to the table nowadays because there's just so many good wrestlers out there, so many great wrestlers out there, guys and girls.
And you can't be a one trick pony. So no. You got to have multiple hats. I mean, look at you. I mean, backstage, this wrestling. I mean, you got to have multiple hats.
Yeah,
you can't just come in and be like, I'm a superstar. I'm going to wrestle one thing and that's it, the end.
Yeah. And if you are going to be that person, you better be selling a bunch of tickets and a lot of
Exactly. Well, QT, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. We look forward to having you back here. I know you've done a couple seminars here in Nashville and look forward to having you come back to Nashville. And hopefully we'll have AEW in Nashville soon.
Yeah, I think I'll be there, believe it or not, on the 11th of December.
Oh, wow.
I should be there for the Coastal Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, CCW. I think they run in
Nashville. Yeah. So I was down in Miami, and now they want to redo another one up there in Nashville. So I think that's the 11th is a Saturday of December. So cool. I'm excited, you know, and then I'll be on the show that night, I believe. So we'll see.
Awesome.
If you guys can make it out there, you know, I'd love to see you.
That's enough notice that we may be able to make that work.
Especially with having kids and whatnot. So, yeah, so that'll be a good one. And looking forward to having you in Nashville. And, again, QT Marshall Eli. Thank you for being on the show today with us.
Of course. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Battleground Podcast. Make sure you give it 5 stars and a nice review. To stay up to date with the show, follow them at Battleground Podcast on Instagram.